Okay, now time for something completely different on the program. You'll recall the recent Icelandic volcanic eruptions. Well, they didn't release sufficient ash to disrupt air travel, but we understand, and it's claimed they did release a very large pulse of sulfur dioxide, which has travelled over Ireland. To learn more about this, we're joined on the program now by Professor John Soddo. A very good morning to you.
And good morning to you as well. Thanks for asking me. Yeah.
Is this something that we should be concerned about? Because I have spoken to a number of people who've been out playing golf or out on the beaches or what have you, and they did say that they did get this sulfur-like smell and put it down to maybe some local phenomenon. But you're saying this quite possibly could be from these eruptions.
Well, I don't exactly know the time when you were talking to those people, but it's pretty true to say that round about the 6th of September, the EPA monitoring stations picked up sulfur dioxide at really quite high and very unusual levels. Sulfur dioxide is a gas, as you might know, and it's a precursor to something like sulfuric acid when it's oxidized, and that's the acid rain. But the sulfur dioxide certainly came over from the Icelandic volcano that's called Bárðarbungu, that we've heard quite a lot about recently, and the weather patterns blew it towards the western coast of Ireland. It hit your area, really, went down towards Ennis, but up towards you, and then crossed the country, and then went up again, and people in Norway and Finland also began to smell this rather pungent odour. So I'm not sure when your friends smelt this.
Yeah, it was around about that time, and there was this, they reported sort of the smell of rotten eggs. I don't know if that's is what you'd expect them to say.
Well, the sulfur dioxide, when it's strong, is really quite a sort of bitter, acrid, acidic type material. Very often, as a chemist, and I'm a chemist, I almost always say that hydrogen sulfide is rotten eggs.
Mm-hmm.
There's another sulfur compound that's quite important in the atmosphere called dimethyl sulfide, and that's a bit like rotting cabbage. That's not a very scientific way of doing it, but the sulfur dioxide, if it was round about the 6th of September in your area, then that was almost certainly due to sulfur dioxide and may well have had a sort of a burning sensation.
Yeah. Okay, well, if any of your listeners notice that, they can get in contact with us. Professor, is there any danger to this? I know in very concentrated levels perhaps there is, but when it's circulating and perhaps diluted somewhat in the air, does it present any danger?
Not with just a one-off like that. The type of levels that it got to are ones which would be classified as toxic, I guess, if it was for many, many hours or days, and if it happened regularly as an event because of eruptions from the Icelandic volcano. But as it stood, then no, your listeners don't have anything to worry about.
That's good to hear, because this is a chemical that was employed by the Romans. In fact, perhaps could be described and is described as the first chemical weapon.
Well, it wasn't actually by the Romans. The Romans were
the Roman times. I beg your pardon, Professor.
It is in a place that's obviously in the news now as being an area that might be using chemical warfare at this moment. But it was in, I think it's A.D. was it 250 that the Persians were trying to attack a Roman fort that was there.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get the soldiers out, so they had tunnels underneath it, and they used sulfur and another couple of acidic compounds to make sulfur dioxide, which killed them all off. So that really was a very unusual, but probably the first use of a chemical like that as a warfare agent.
Now, is this something that we need to monitor into the future? Say there were prolonged eruptions and perhaps the weather patterns were reasonably steady, bringing it over any populated area, I suppose. I mean, like, how is this affecting Icelandic people? Would they be impacted by it, for instance?
Yes, they are. And on their weather forecasts currently, they've obviously got these levels of sulfur dioxide that there is. But we have the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which monitors it. And they saw this pulse, and they reported it on their Twitter. I think the main issue would be this, is that do others, like radio stations like yours, monitor the EPA Twitter on the air quality index in order to pass on very quickly to your own listeners, people who live in the area, that there might be something on, certainly to warn people like asthmatics.
Yeah, and this is a discussion you think should be happening. This is this is something that should be done.
Yeah, yes, and I think I'll pick you as your radio station, as you're asking, but I think you probably should assign somebody to monitor the EPA Twitter account that's on the air quality, and you might well see very, very quickly, because they're very good at saying it's poor, very poor quality, or good, on the whole, generally speaking, good.
Yes.
But if you were able to quickly get that information out, I think local radio stations are missing a trick here if they're not doing that.
Because we did see it was perhaps different circumstances that led to it. It seems rather rare, at least from my memory, but there was quality warnings across the UK a couple of months back, which does seem rather rare, but it's important information for those, particularly with respiratory problems, I presume.
Absolutely. The issue over the UK those few months ago was something that's a bit more akin to what we call a smog. That is, there was a vast build-up of particulate matter, very small particulate matter. Remember, sulfur dioxide is a gas. Particulate matter, though, has exactly the same type of effect if it gets down into the lungs. And when you've got weather conditions that keep things stable, as it was over London, then you get issues. We're a bit luckier over in Ireland because, to date anyway, we get rather more changeable conditions. So very often it's not stagnant for weeks.
So it's certainly worthwhile information and something we should definitely keep track on and keep in mind either collectively or individually.
Yes, the public themselves, of course, can particularly if they're asthmatics. And if you've got kids, which many people obviously have, can just quickly, if they have a phone that can and use Twitter, then they can find these things out for themselves. So I think increasingly, as we become more of a media savvy set of people in the world, but people should do that for themselves.
Professor, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme.
And you, thank you very much.
And that was Professor John Sadu speaking to us.